race to savings. Now at Menards, we have what you need to give your bathroom a fresh, updated look. Shop Menards' great selection of bathroom products from American Standard. No matter the size of your bathroom, American Standard offers a superior line of toilets, faucets, and more. Complete your bathroom update today with American Standard. Plus, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and race to savings on more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
You're tuned into SEC Sunday Night, part of the Chief Sports Network.
Hit the lights. It's Monday night on a special edition of SEC Sunday Night. I'm Rob Williams. He is Craig McMichael. And we are proudly presented by Hewitt Domodurus Law, HDLawSC.com. These are the best in the business. This is not the guy that you see on the billboard. This is not the guy that you see on the television commercial. Brad and Dean are the absolute best. I enjoy spending time with them. Outside of legal matters, actually, I had dinner with Dean and his wife last week. It's absolutely fantastic. Love spending time with them, and not a legal trouble in sight there. But if you have a personal injury, if you need an insurance claim, anything, if you got bitten by a dog, workers' comp, all those things, HDLawSC.com, Hewitt Domodurus Law, covering the entire state of South Carolina. Make sure that you talk to Brad and Dean and let them know that you found out about them right here on SEC Sunday Night. All right, Craig, it has been an interesting week. Can you believe that we are in February already? That we're fully into it. By the time we are back on the air next week, we will have passed Valentine's Day in the year of 2026. That's just absolutely incredible to me. How are you tonight, my friend? What's going on?
Good. I'm on computer number two within the last 3 minutes. We made the switch just before the show. Very good. Full slate of athletic directing. We had a swim meet. I was coaching seventh grade girls basketball. Got a Mountain Dew from Taco Bell. No Baja Blast. We went with the OG Mountain Dew. My little one asked one time, what does Mountain Dew taste like? Goodness is what it tastes like. Goodness. But February 14th is coming up. Get that special someone a Valentine's. It doesn't take much. Listen, you can go to Canva, you can make a card, you can get out a pen, a paper, markers. Sometimes that'll mean more than going over to Publix and getting yourself some flowers. So
I would personally recommend going to secpretty.com and buying a hat of your school's colors, or maybe a mock neck or a crew neck sweatshirt or something like that, as Craig throws up the hook'em. That actually leads me to my next question, Craig. Mm-hmm. But let me say this before I move on to my hook'em question that you're throwing at me right now. Sure. First of all, congratulations to the Seattle Seahawks on a big win in the Super Bowl last night. So many.
How'd Drake May do?
He was decidedly overwhelmed. early on in the game, for sure. As a Patriots, we get a lot of opportunities here to cover athletics, and we like to have some fun and throw our opinions into it at times and our biases. But I think that we do a pretty good job of removing bias when we need to. And Craig, it's kind of nice to watch an NFL game that we know that we're not covering, and we have no media responsibilities for. And so I can just let my fandom run wild as a lifelong Patriots fan. Tough game to watch last night, but still, ahead of the schedule, the Patriots were at $50 million in cap space. It's a young roster. Vrabel's in his first year. I think they'll be back. I also think that the Seahawks will be back. Lots of SEC flavor on these rosters, like we said. notably, especially for our audience here, as we know that we have a wide audience, but a lot of South Carolina fans, Ernest Jones becomes only the second Gamecock to win two Super Bowls, and Nick Emenwori becomes the 20th Gamecock to win a Super Bowl and did so in his rookie season. Just a phenomenal first year for the young man out of Irmo, South Carolina, just here in Columbia. So it's really cool to see all of the SEC representation there on the biggest stage in football, the biggest night in television, regardless of who you're rooting for or why you're watching. Everybody is tuned in for the Super Bowl. Did you do anything special last night, or did you just hunker down with the fam? Did you even watch the game? Because we know how you feel about the NFL.
I only watched the damn game because I thought we were covering it. That's the only reason I watched the game. Like, I would have been like all into college lacrosse if not. But no, I thought that we were going to spend 45 minutes breaking down why Drake May just could not throw. But let me tell you the best story from last night. We had Taco Tuesday on Sunday. So we made tacos with the fam. We had a good time watching the game. And then my brother has YouTube TV, and I was watching on the antenna. So I was like 45 seconds ahead of him. And we were talking about your boy Drake May. First, when he threw into triple coverage and almost got the ball intercepted. And I hung up the phone to my brother and I said, wait till you see this next one. And he calls me back and just starts laughing when I made through that big interception. But enjoyed the game. Commercials, I feel like were better when we were kids. I have a question for you. Did the Polar Bears hit the transfer portal?
It looks like it. And a great move. A great move by Pepsi. We know that I'm a Pepsi guy. Okay, I'm a Pepsi guy.
Come sponsor the show and I'll become a Pepsi guy.
It's a controversial statement. That's absolutely true. I'm a Pepsi over Coke guy. And so brilliant marketing move, I think, to steal the Polar Bears, because Coke maybe has focused in a different direction and they saw the opportunity. But yeah, fantastic. Fantastic observation there, my friend. Here's the next thing that I'll ask, because it's the day after the Super Bowl and everybody is watching the Super Bowl last night. But now is the first day that we don't have football for several months. I understand that we are on the air tonight, so obviously everybody's watching SEC Sunday night. But on a normal day after the Super Bowl or a normal Monday, now that we're into this kind of no man's land, what would you be watching tonight, Craig? I'm going to give you four options. Okay. Because I just noticed four quick options here on my screen. We have the unrivaled 3-on-3 women's basketball league, which is now the off-season official league that is happening during the off-season of the WNBA. It's actually kind of interesting because we have 3-on-3 basketball in the Olympics. These players are doing it's an exciting kind of experience out there. I just turned it on for a minute, and they said that players with 10 or more free throws within a certain span of time, whoever has the highest free throw percentage is going to win $50,000. Via one of their advertising partners. So an easy way for some of these ladies, $50,000 is a lot of money for a professional women's basketball player just because your free throw percentage is up. So that's a pretty significant bonus. So we've got that one. We've also got a little ACC men's basketball, ACC men's basketball between NC State and Louisville in a little bit of a matchup there in the Yum Center. Mm-hmm. We also have TGL Golf on ESPN2. Have you explored the world of TGL Golf yet?
Is that the Rory and Tiger one where it's like indoors?
Yes. So they play mainly in LA, but they have teams representing different cities.
I was focused on Tiger's ex-girlfriend Lindsey Vonn all weekend, and a badass she was.
What a story. And they just announced the extent of the injury that she suffered.
Not great. Like Joel Theismann-esque.
Compound tibia fracture, I think is what they announced it as. So we've got those three options. We've got the 3-on-3 basketball. We've got TGL. We've got men's basketball. But the game that I'm watching, Craig, is the women's SEC basketball between number 18 Kentucky and number 4 Texas. So of those four options, does anything grab your attention here on the night after the Super Bowl?
What's the name of our show? SEC Sunday Night.
Yeah, it is the most compelling thing for me, and we'll come back around to that at the end of the show. I want to run through a couple of things here, Craig, pertaining to men's basketball first, though, before we get around to the women.
Sure.
In just a little bit. A relatively quiet week in the SEC, I would say. You know, you have some matchups there on Tuesday and Wednesday. Nothing that's a blockbuster. Most notably, I would say that Texas A&M hit a little bit of a skid this week as they lost on Wednesday and then lost again on Saturday handedly to Florida. Oklahoma over Vanderbilt was the big upset of the weekend, 92-91. The Commodores, ranked 15th in the country, go down at home to the Sooners, who have just frankly not been good this season. Arkansas maintains and takes down Mississippi State by 20. The most entertaining game of the weekend was Kentucky over Tennessee, 74-71. Kentucky, although unranked, Craig, continues to show me something. It's interesting, and this will flip now when we get new rankings, but Kentucky 17-7, Tennessee 16-7. And Tennessee was just inside of the top 25 prior to that loss. So really entertaining game on the heels there of the Duke-North Carolina game, which was also entertaining, but not in our purview. Kentucky just continues to show me that they're going to be a potentially a problem for somebody down the road, and we have talked about them extensively. People in Lexington not feeling great about Mark Pope, so on and so forth. But when I look at the teams that are going to be a problem when we get into the tournament, and I'll make this statement again, the league is deep. It has a lot of good teams. It is absolutely unrealistic to think coming out of last year, 14 teams getting into the NCAA tournament and a lot of top-heavy ones too, and then Florida winning the national championship, the greatest year any conference has had in the game of college basketball, maybe ever.
Yep.
It's ridiculous to think that could be replicated, and it has not been. And so people think that the SEC is down. I don't know that it's down as much as it's, you know, back to reality. There are a lot of good teams projecting – 9, maybe even 10 teams getting into the tournament right now. The interesting thing is nobody, I don't think, on the latest line that I saw was slated above a 4 seed. Yep. And so you've got a lot of teams that are in between like 4 and 10 in terms of where they're going to be seated. 3 different teams were projected 6 seeds. And so I can just see the SEC becoming a problem because you're going to put somebody in that's going to catch fire. And we've talked about Florida and Arkansas. Kentucky just continues to be one that sticks in the back of my mind. As Nate Amendt continues to get better for Tennessee and Rick Barnes, though, that's a big one as well. So we'll just continue to monitor as we're in the last month. We're in the stretch now.
But I guess that's my question. You know, whether we get 8, 9 teams, whatever that is in there. Florida looks like Sweet 16, Elite 8. Could make a run there. They're getting hot. You know, I'm not going to discount Arkansas with Cal.
I agree.
Kentucky maybe can go Sweet 16. You know what I mean? Like you could see them getting hot. Right. They're streaky, but they could go out. Who else do you feel comfortable? Like outside of that, like who else do you feel comfortable making it out of that first weekend? Like to me, what I see is we're going to get a handful of teams in there. Maybe a first round win, but then probably the vast majority are going home Saturday, Sunday. Maybe we've got 2 or 3 teams left for the Sweet 16 right. Week 2.
Well, like I just mentioned, Tennessee. So yep. Nate Amendt is probably going to be a top 5 pick in the NBA draft, and he continues to get better as a true freshman as the year goes on. So if he can provide significant scoring for the Volunteers, I can see them getting out of the first weekend. You also have a team like Alabama, who we're about to talk about, who I think has a lot of talent. And ability to get there, but maybe lacking a little talent now. And then the other one I would say is Vanderbilt, who has been the surprise of the year. And although they took a shocking loss on Saturday to Oklahoma, I think Vanderbilt has the pieces in place to play disciplined enough and get out of the first weekend potentially. When you look at teams with that type of potential. And you know, we've got teams. I just mentioned Texas A&M has kind of been on a skid. But their brand of basketball plays well in the tournament. We know that Georgia's got some talent, and they may.
Georgia's going to be dependent on their matchup. Like I feel like if Georgia can run, they can be fine. But let's be honest: when you get to the SEC conference tournament, and then you get to the NCAA tournament, you're going to get somebody who plays a little bit of defense, and they're going to slow down. And I think that's going to be the Achilles heel for the Dogs. Like if Georgia can just run and go, yeah, sure, like they can go. But I think we've just seen it, especially in SEC play. They were super high on a so-so non-conference schedule. But now that they've gotten into the league, defenses have gotten tougher. It's a little bit of a slower pace. They are totally struggling. So, like, that's where, like, hey, maybe we'll go back and we'll be the NIT champions. Remember that a couple years ago? Like, that's the thing I was hanging my hat on, Georgia being an NIT champion. Question for you, like, looking also post-March, South Carolina, Mississippi State looking for new coaches?
You know, we have a little – like I said, we have this final month here to to see how it plays out, and I think there are some things that could go up you know, that can shift around. My opinion is in South Carolina, the way things are trending right now, they'll definitely be looking for a new coach. Just because if you finish last in the league 2 years in a row, I think it's going to be difficult to justify not making a change. However, I also think that there are a lot of factors that have to be considered here. And I don't know the situation at Mississippi State quite as well. But what I do know is that Mississippi State is one of those SEC schools who is not flush with cash, not destitute, because it's an SEC school. And so you're still going to have, you're going to have money that's pouring in there, but you're not a metropolis. You're not somewhere that has a super rich alumni base. And so you have to kind of make some difficult decisions, I think, in terms of where you're putting your priorities. And when you're in the SEC, the expectation is to put all your chips in on the big three sports, in terms of football, baseball, and basketball. I think that schools like South Carolina and Mississippi State specifically are care a lot about baseball. Yep. But that doesn't mean they don't care about basketball. And so – you have difficult decisions to make as athletic directors in that case, because you don't want to sink too much money into a basketball program when you may be able to allocate those funds in a different direction.
Well, if you look at it, Mississippi State has just gone through a big renovation at the Hump in Starkville. Like, over the last couple of years, Mississippi State has put a lot of money into their basketball program, into their basketball facilities. Women's basketball has been very strong in Starkville. So, like, again, if I'm thinking about South Carolina, Mississippi State, you're going to be hitting every now and again in football. And again, this is not me ripping on them. It's just facing reality. Is it easier to push a few more chips in for basketball and for baseball to kind of get there? I know our guy Ryan is definitely looking forward to baseball season. I hear him almost like on a daily, if not a weekly basis, saying, good Lord, I'm so tired of watching my Bulldogs play. I'm ready for baseball season. But, like, to me, that's where that commitment has to go. And, you know, we've said our piece about Jeff Levy and Mississippi State. But, like, at some point, you've got to get out of that 10 to 16 range. And then one of the big three, it's going to happen in baseball. But, like, to me, like, Mississippi State, it wasn't that long ago that they were not, you know, they were decent at it. So, like, to me, that's where, like, that energy's got to go. And I get it's hard, but, like, you've got to do something, because in the SEC, you just cannot consistently be that bottom feeder. That's a way where those funds are really going to dry up and everyone's just going to, you know, basically cash themselves out.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that really just brings us, when we talk about money, I want to shift this conversation a little bit to what happened in Alabama. You know, to put it in layman's terms, Charles Bediako, his case has given a ruling, the judge has given a ruling that he's not going to be eligible. I'm not going to get into injunctions and TROs and all the things, because I understand that not everybody knows exactly how to decipher all that legal jargon, and I'm included in that discussion to a degree.
Yep.
But the takeaway that we need to see is he's not eligible. Charlie Baker, president of the NCAA, had this to say after the ruling. Common sense won a round today. The court saw this for what it is, an attempt by professionals to pivot back to college and crowd out the next generation of students. College sports are for students, not for people who already walked away to go pro and now want to hit the undo button at the expense of a teenager's dream. While we're glad the court upheld the rules our members actually want, one win doesn't fix the national mess of state laws. It's time for Congress to stop watching from the sidelines and help us provide some actual stability. You know, in a little bit of a shift here, we have Charlie Baker speaking from a place of victory. I don't know the last time, Craig, that we've heard him speak from a place of victory, because not often that the NCAA wins in the court of law. But
go ahead. Sorry.
I think he said the right things. And it almost, when you read it, and that's from Ross Dellinger, by the way, I'll give credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
A lot of people have had that story, but I pulled the quote directly from his tweet. It sounds like a power move if you read that in a vacuum, doesn't it?
No.
Please,
Congress, come help save us. Please. Listen, I wrote a story this week on Last Word about this whole case. And, you know, like, we're quick to rip on us and the NCAA and Charlie Baker. Like, he's toothless. He got lucky this time, you know. But, like, I think the question is, like, listen, Congress ain't going to do a damn thing about this. It's too partisan. It's too politicized one way or the other. Whether you're on the red team or the blue team, there's certain ways you feel about whether, you know, athlete compensation. And I don't think Congress is going to solve this. To me, who had the common sense argument was Dan Wetzel. Dan Wetzel wrote a fantastic piece on ESPN, I believe it was Friday or Saturday, where he simply said a very basic question. If you are playing U-12 basketball and you're 13, you can no longer play U-12 basketball. And this is the part. The NCAA has these questions. You went pro. You shouldn't be allowed to play. But what's crazy and what's challenging is it's not necessarily like the NCAA's fault. It's not the federal government's fault. At the end of the day, whether it's Bediako or whether it's Aguilar at Tennessee or it's Trinidad Chambliss at Ole Miss, what are they doing? They're looking and saying, hey, where can we find a favorable home field advantage to get this done? The only reason Bediako was originally okay to play is that the first federal judge donated somewhere between $100,000 and $250,000 to the University of Alabama. He had a vested interest. And then he recused himself. And right. Now this other judge, who, again, Alabama undergrad, Alabama law school, finally made the right call and said, you know what? No, he's not good. But, like, I think this is the problem with college athletics. It's not NIL. It's not the transfer portal. It's basically systemic sometimes of what's happening in our society. I don't like what happens. I'm going to sue somebody. And I'm going to sue it in this court where I'm going to sue it in a place where it doesn't make sense. And it's frustrating. Like, I love Trinidad Chambliss. I think it's fantastic. He doesn't get another year. He should not get another year. Yet Tom Mars is going to middle of nowhere, Mississippi, in order to get that. Joey Aguilar. Oh, my JUCO years shouldn't count. I'm not going to go into the federal case with Diego Pavia. Instead, I'm going to take my case to Knox County Court in Tennessee, where I'm going to get a favorable volunteer judge to say, oh, yeah, your JUCO stuff didn't count. When for all of the years up until last year when they made the Pavia ruling, that they had that. And this is my biggest problem and my biggest challenge is, and this was my argument, what is the power of Greg Sankey? Greg Sankey is a phenomenal commissioner. He speaks, everybody listens. But he was against Bediako getting eligible. But what did Greg Byrne do? Greg Byrne hid behind, well, it's academics. This kid just wants to come back and get his degree. Bull crap. And then Nate Oates.
Well, let him come back and get his degree if that's the case. He doesn't have to play basketball to get a degree.
He does not have to get his degree. Exactly. Does not have to play basketball. But then you have Nate Oates saying, oh, well, this system is screwed up. But, you know, what am I going to do? This guy might be able to help me, so I'm going to let him play. And I think this is the problem and this is the challenge. is because you've seen Charlie Baker and we've seen the NCAA stripped of power. Now we're having Greg Sankey, who, you know, you'd expect this from Jim Phillips and the ACC, but not from Greg Sankey. When Greg Sankey has alignment. Well, his one of his golden institutions, one of his blue blood institutions, Alabama, shows that the SEC may not have that alignment. Because, and that's the problem right now with college athletics. I want to get mine. I'm not worried about all of ours. And it's an absolute problem. It's an absolute issue. So sorry if I went out of soapbox there, but obviously I'm a little fired up about it.
I think that you're right on the alignment issue. And the thing that I'll look back and say before we, and we're up against the break here, so we got to get out of here. But the thing that I'll look back and say is, I agree with you that Charlie Baker is whining here. I think that what my point was, if I'm someone who doesn't know sports and doesn't understand the dynamic of the toothless NCAA, and I read that statement, it feels like it has more oomph than what our perspective shows that it does not at all. I think if I'm reading that, if I present that to somebody who's not a sports fan and they read that, like the way that it was written and the way that it's spoken, I think comes across as a lot more powerful. And we read it and go, okay, guy, but like, this is the one time you've had to speak from this position of victory in who knows how long, and you don't have any real authority. And to your point, Craig, alignment from conference to conference is the only way that we ever get to where all of us are trying to go in terms of college football specifically, but right, college athletics as a whole. And if we don't have alignment within the conferences, it's going to be even more difficult to have alignment between Sankey, Phillips, Petitti, Yormark, everybody together. All right, this is SEC Sunday Night. It's 8:26. We'll be right back in just a moment with our friend Brad Crawford. Speaking of college football, Craig, it's never over. And although the college football season is behind us, that just means we turn and we look forward. Brad's got his wildest and biggest predictions for 2026 coming up right after this.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete recovering from injury or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt D'Amaduro's Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt D'Amaduro's, we're on your team.
This is SEC Sunday Night, part of the Chiefs Sports Network.
All right, welcome back to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network and proudly presented by Hewitt D'Amaduro's Law, hdlawsc.com. We are joined now by Brad Crawford of 24/7 Sports, and Brad has made it through a week of winter weather with the rest of us, and now we're on the backside of the Super Bowl by the time you guys see this, so hopefully we're clear of the clouds and the ice and the snow. Brad, how's it going?
I'm doing well, man. I'm about 2 weeks now from returning from Miami for the now championship game. Got to see Indiana cap it off, 16-0 season. Just historical run under Kirk Cignetti. Carson Beck had a chance, man. I was on the sideline, Miami down six, thinking this home crowd was about to see Carson Beck win it 28-27. Didn't happen. Indiana pulled it off and, like I said, finished off just a grand feat. Probably the best coaching job, at least I've seen in my career.
We have had plenty of discussion, as my co-host here is a Georgia beat writer. We've had tons of discussion about Carson Beck through the years, and especially this year, as he had some opinions on him that maybe weren't the most optimistic heading into some of those games.
Shocked.
But there it was, right in his hands to make the play. You mentioned the end of the year. So the first thing I really want to start with as an SEC show is we put a bow on 2025, and we've all kind of already done that, right? But just to get your take, where does the SEC stand in the landscape of college football coming out of the 2025 season?
Yeah, it's kind of a down year in the SEC, in my opinion, covering college football for CBS from a national standpoint. You know, heading into the year, I thought the SEC would lead Power Five conferences in terms of playoff recipients, and they did. They got five in, but it was a down year, I think. Big Ten was better than the SEC in August. It's better than the SEC now as we exit 2025 season after Indiana now has won a title, Ohio State won a title, Michigan now 3 years ago. So I think it might be a couple of years, fellas, before the SEC gets back to that mountaintop, because not only are, you know, Ohio State and Indiana elite, but Oregon's due under Dan Lanning, and I think Kyle Whittingham at Michigan was one of this cycle's best hires. So I had the Big Ten 1, SEC 2, then it's a sizable drop-off between ACC and Big 12.
Brett, as you look at those rankings, is there one factor that stands out? Is it coaching? Is it NIL dollars? What is it that has allowed the Big Ten to, for at least the time being, move ahead of the SEC?
Yeah, I think NIL certainly, you know, has a hand in this. I think the Big Ten was sort of building momentum the last several years during the SEC's run. We saw Georgia win back-to-back. Obviously, Alabama, Clemson had that kind of battle, one versus one, 4 or 5 years in a row there. But to me, I mean, the Big Ten has athletes and talent equal to the SEC now. Transfer portal has made this game much more comparable from the elite standpoint. And I think if you take, you know, the four best teams in the Big Ten against the four best teams in the SEC, the Big Ten probably has a 3-1 or so edge. Teams like Texas and the SEC, I think Texas is due to win a title under Steve Sarkisian. That's kind of the team, fellas, that I have circled in 2026 that could potentially get there and end the Big Ten streak.
Well, you just teed me up perfectly. I have it written down here. Although you and I have differing views on transfer portal rankings, it's hard to deny the fact that there's been a lot of talent flooding into Austin and into Baton Rouge. So if you have to make an argument for one of those two teams, who are you higher on in 2026? Is it Lane Kiffin's Bayou Bengals, or does Sark finally break through? You kind of made a note to it there about Texas. If so, why the Longhorns over Lane Kiffin and the Tigers?
Yeah, I think right now I trust Arch Manning having a Heisman caliber season more than I do Sam Leavitt. Not saying Sam Leavitt is not an elite caliber quarterback who could possibly get there, but I mean, Lane Kiffin's asking, you know, a new crop of assistants, pretty much 40 or so new transfer portal signees to find camaraderie, be able to gel. We saw he did that at Ole Miss, and then he bounced before the playoff, but I just don't know if he can do that year one at LSU. LSU is the fourth and final team I have in my way too early projection for the playoff, because I think LSU has to get there in Lane Kiffin's first season. But Texas is a team that will be more complete. I mean, you've got Colin Simmons coming back off the edge, arguably the best defensive player in college football now that Caleb Downs is out of the mix and going to be a first-round pick. So I like Texas. Arch Manning showed me a lot down the stretch, especially his last three or four starts. He was the Arch Manning that we thought he'd be back in August.
I love all the Arch love, but I will have to say Lane is going to have his hands full. That schedule is not going to be easy. Moving to a 9-game schedule, I think that is like the elephant in the room for me for the SEC of, like, you know, what are these teams going to expect? You know, we're going to be expecting a lot of LSU. 9-3 is not going to be enough. Texas bounce is back. Why am I not anything about my dogs and Kirby Smart? I mean, they are the back-to-back SEC champion. And historically, if we have back-to-back SEC champions, we are automatically putting them at number one. We are saying that they're there for the, you know, right there for the national championship. Is it because Kirby is doing the more non-traditional route of staying more in the high school and only dabbling in the portal? What do you think? Where do you think that narrative comes out with Athens?
Yeah, Craig, not to mention the NIL tier system that Georgia has in place. I know Kirby's not the only guy to have that in the SEC, but I talked to a 2027 recruit that got an offer recently from Georgia. And he was telling me how, you know, Kirby doesn't want to talk about NIL on recruiting visits. He wants to pay the player after his freshman year. You're going to get some money, obviously, to sign with Georgia, but you have to show what you've got in Athens as a freshman, and then you start getting on that 2 or 3 year plan. I think that's starting to hurt Kirby a little bit. Georgia's not really a sexy transfer portal destination because of that NIL and revenue share deal that Kirby Smart has. And I know you mentioned back-to-back SEC titles, but they also have back-to-back Sugar Bowl losses. Arguably,
listen,
the
we're only trying to keep the positive. We don't want the facts to ruin the argument either.
You know, they lost a line of scrimmage game against Notre Dame 2 years ago, and then against Ole Miss, they just got beat by really two better players than anybody had Georgia on defense. So Kirby has to figure out a way to not only get better defensively from start to finish, but Gunnar Stoughton has got to scare some people. And right now, I think he can beat most SEC defenses, but when you start talking about having to beat three or four consecutive top 10 opponents in the playoff, it's not going to happen with Gunnar Stoughton.
Brad, what would you say? I've been on record here saying multiple times that I think that the transfer portal rankings probably hype up teams just a little bit too much or set unfair expectations. You mentioned Sam Leavitt. He's the number one quarterback coming out of the portal. Fans and some analysts even can latch on to that number one attached to his name. But I think we could agree that he might be the third or fourth best quarterback in the SEC heading into 2026 at best. And so while LSU may not need the top tier, is he good enough to get them over the mountain? I just think that sometimes when we say things like number one quarterback, number one tackle, number one edge rusher, it creates a narrative surrounding them. But these transfer portal rankings are so relative to what else is in the transfer portal. We don't necessarily know how much time a guy has been in school versus sure. another guy when we're putting an assignment on him. It's not like it's apples to apples coming out of high school. You could have somebody transfer after their freshman year or after being a four-year starter at another program. And so there's a lot of variables at play. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have high expectations for LSU or for a team like Texas, but setting the expectation all the way at national championship, like it's a failure in Baton Rouge if he doesn't get there, I think sets something up to be a little bit of an unfair mountain for Lane Kiffin to climb. I would say that the floor is the college football playoff, but if he gets there, then I think that he's done what he needed to do in year one.
No, I think you're right. I think the floor is making the playoff. If he doesn't get to a 12-team bracket, that is a failure. I mean, Brian Kelly won 10 games twice, went 9-4 once. He was fired year four after a 5-3 start. Not getting to the playoff did not work for Brian Kelly. He won 29 games his first 3 years. Do we think Lane Kiffin's going to win 29 or more games his first 3 years? He better, or you know, he won't be the coach there in 2029 or so. But I think part of the reason you have variance in transfer portal rankings, notably quarterback position. I mean, we saw what Lane Kiffin did out of respect for him with Trinidad Chambliss. He was outside the top 25. He was the second transfer Ole Miss took. Never supposed to start this season and did, outplayed Austin Simmons, got the start, and you know, took Ole Miss really, really far. Best season in program history in my eyes. But then you look at a team like Texas Tech. I mean, a lot of us, including myself, had Texas Tech as a preseason playoff team. Had never won the Big 12, at least in the last decade or so, had never made the playoff. And Joey McGuire got there with pretty much a 95% transfer portal-laden roster. So I do think that recruiting rankings, maybe, there's a wide variance and a lot of opinions. But I think for the most part, man, these last 3 to 4 cycles, a bunch of our analysts and obviously other insiders at other organizations have got these portal rankings right. And a lot of these teams inside the top 10 are going to be pretty darn good, including potentially Kentucky.
That's there's your sleeper for 2026. Yeah. I mean, what Will Stein, there's a momentum there. There's an excitement there that, you know, that was seven wins under Mark Stoops. And what I feel like Will is being able to do now with now that the NIL dollars are starting to wake up a little bit in Lexington, he's get the portal. I know he was looking at Leavitt for a little while there. I think that one's going to be one of the more exciting ones to look at and keep an eye on. You wonder though, like, okay, who, you know, they're going to go up. Somebody's got to come down now. And I think that's going to be a scary look.
It's the law of averages, right? I mean, Kentucky, right. this portal cycle, based on my sources, I've talked to several, you know, this cycle, the Wildcats spent more NIL / revenue share than Alabama, Missouri, South Carolina, Mississippi State. Some of those are, you know, annual top 25 programs. So there's buy-in there in the Bluegrass. Will Stein took that job for a reason, left a pretty good job as OC at Oregon with, you know, two Heisman finalists, really three with Dante Moore these last three cycles. So I think maybe you might see Oregon take a step back after Dan Lanning lost both of his 3 to 4 year coordinators. And then Kentucky's a team where they might be a dark horse, but dark horse, in my opinion, is like UK finishing 8-4, not getting to the playoff.
Yeah, no. And I wonder too, like, if we can kind of go full circle on your comments earlier. We're talking about the top four in the SEC and the top four in the Big Ten. The mantra has always been about the SEC depth. And I think we're really kind of starting to see that. I think you look at, you know, we look at high school recruiting rankings, we look at the transfer portal rankings, we look at kind of what's going on in the NIL, where Georgia, Alabama used to hoard all of that talent. That talent's now being dispersed. So it's not necessarily that the SEC is worse. It's just that it's a much more even slate. And I think we saw that this year. I think the average margin of victory was like less than 10 points, less than what it is in the NFL this year in the SEC contest.
Yeah, and Craig, to your point, people like us will say in just a few months when the NFL draft happens that just as many players are drafted from the SEC as years past, and they continue to hold the gap there. And that's why, is because the talent still exists in the league. It just isn't trapped on the same three or four teams that it has been, that top day one talent in the NFL draft. Brad, your thoughts?
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think 2 months from now, we're going to see probably 49% or so of the draft picks come from the SEC, probably going to have 35% from the Big Ten, and the rest are going to be diamonds in the rough elsewhere. I mean, there's a lot of Big Ten. I follow that league as closely as I do the SEC now, being a national guy for CBS, and there's a lot of talent in the Big Ten that maybe doesn't get the pedestal that a lot of these SEC teams get. But, I mean, to me, I think you see a team like Alabama. We knew that the Crimson Tide would take a step back post Nick Saban, no matter who they hired, but that Bama mystique is gone. Like, Georgia had a mystique, Bama had a mystique, obviously, and that's gone now. And then another SEC team that, if they get to the playoff again, Oklahoma, that is, that'd be great for the league. But Oklahoma in week two goes to Ann Arbor. That's a huge non-conference game there in September. So I think that's where you're going to see maybe the gap at least widen just a bit in 2026 before the postseason, and we get, you know, some results that really matter.
Okay, Brad, one more before we get you out of here. You had an article drop just a couple days ago with your 2026 projections, and I would love for you not to give everything away here to our audience because I need to go read it, but really my question is more, what's your process? Because we all are in this mode now, right? We've put the bow on 2025, and it's time to fully look forward. We've kind of gotten this couple of weeks where we've really been able to hone in on the transfer portal, but we've talked about it multiple times here that with no second portal window and the diminishing value of spring games and spring football, we're pretty much here. Like, we just about have all the data that we're going to have when this thing kicks off at week zero in 2026, later down the road in the fall. So what's your process to coming up with these projections as it stands right now, and how does that shape the narrative of what you're going to talk about, we're going to talk about, and everybody like us is going to talk about for the next 6 or 7 months?
Yeah, I've tried to simulate two deep for the top 25 or 30 teams I think really have a shot at this, maybe three or four from the G5, 25 to 26 or so from the Power Five. Obviously, we're staying at a 12-team bracket. I think we do expand to 16 in 2027. But for this projection, I went by schedule favorability, how many teams are going to, you know, be 11-1 or so going into conference championship weekend. And then from the G5, I don't think we're going to see two G5 reps this time around. I think the 12 seed is going to be the American champion. Last season at this time, I took Navy. Navy was 7-0 and ranked before, you know, facing a arduous November, kind of fell from there. And I think Memphis this year, fellas, is going to be, with the first year coach, potentially that G5 bid. Memphis or UNLV with Dan Mullen, those sort of my two G5 sleepers.
Shout out to our guy Memphis Spence there. We're on the Charlie Huff train. That's awesome, Brad.
He's a great coach.
Excited about, he really is. And you just saw, he's like, he's kind of respected that process coming out of that Saban tree, right? Did his time at Marshall, gone to Southern Miss. Now he's at Memphis.
And I love what you had to say about UNLV. Dan Mullen really having a lot of success out there. It seems like maybe he'd be a guy that would fit well in the SEC. I'm not sure if we've tried that before or if maybe we should circle back and give that one more go.
Well, you don't have to recruit as much anymore, so I'm sure he'd love it. So,
Brad Crawford of 24/7 Sports here with us on SEC Sunday night. Brad, thanks a lot for being with us.
Yeah, man, no problem.
We'll be right back after this.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt Diamandouros Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt Diamandouros, we're on your team.
Oh, man. The building is on fire.
Emergencies and accidents happen. When you're in the middle of a fire or water event, all you want is for things to return to normal as soon as possible. Resto Pros of the Midlands is with you, guiding you through the process and working with you to get your home or office back in working order. They'll answer your questions, discuss procedures, and can act as your advocate when it comes to processing your insurance claim. RestoProsMidlandsSC.com. Open 24/7 when you need them. Quality that is guaranteed.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete recovering from injury or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
Yo, what's up? Baby, let's go!
ETC is go.
Thank you.
Go.
ETC is go.
Copy us is go.
Houston flight is go.
Follow go.
FTM is go.
Safety comms is go.
FTU is go.
LRD is go.
FRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director, NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
It's SEC Sunday night, presented by Hewitt Diamandouros. Visit hdlawsc.com. It's go time.
Welcome back to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network and proudly presented by Hewitt Diamandouros Law. And now, first of all, thanks so much to Brad Crawford for being with us. Some really good takes. The Kentucky thing really sticks out to me as a sleeper. The spending report there, some teams they outspent in the portal kind of sticks out to me as we look forward to 2026. But it's time. We don't have time to continue to talk about, you know, so many things on the periphery. It's time to lock in, gentlemen, because we have to get really serious.
Talk about dessert.
Make our way to the message board. Casey is here, and it is time for us to figure out what is really happening inside of these athletic programs, because there's no better source than a confirmed message board source.
Seriously,
that's very true.
What's going on, Casey?
How are you guys? I'm excited to be here. I had some hot cocoa in my cup tonight, but
you drank it all.
Yeah, I drank it all during Craig's monologue there earlier.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Four score and 7 years ago.
All right, well,
our forefathers.
We're gonna start off with
this content.
We're gonna start off with our weekly "Who should South Carolina hire to be the men's basketball coach?" board. It seems we've had one of these almost every week. So, Casey, take it away.
Yeah. So our MBG. What did MBG say here? South Carolina needs to go get Kelvin Sampson. Go get Kelvin Sampson. Carolina Spur says, that's it.
Well, I think that is in reference, and you have to check the On3 NIL post that was screenshotted. Is that the term? Screenshot.
Carolina Spur. Thank you for the comment.
Yeah, that's a lot of technology that Carolina Spur is using. It says, new, Kelvin Sampson gave a blunt assessment of Houston's NIL funding. Quote, you know, we have a very poor athletic department. We're poor. You know, we were poor when I got here and we're still poor. We probably have the lowest budget of anybody in the Power Four.
Did you guys see the story? Because that's a real quote. That's not manufactured.
No, I didn't. I didn't see the story, but I will tell you that that's also a cry for help. Mm-hmm. Like that's a plea to your higher. I've seen it done. I'm not going to tell you what school and what sport, but I've seen it done, and it worked. So that is kind of a cry for help. He's not talking to the fan. Well, he's not talking to the media. He's talking to the fans. I know that doesn't seem like brain surgery.
No, and I think obviously the message board poster here is coming at it from the angle of, well, maybe he needs a life raft to get out of there, which, you know, maybe isn't a terrible angle if you've got money at another program.
Yeah, if he's not pushing a shopping cart around like at boosters meetings, just looking for hundreds to be thrown in there, then yeah, he is going to leave. There's no question about it.
But I remember a couple years ago, was it Sports Illustrated or Yahoo, did a story with Holgorsen, like just after he got to Houston, and they were talking about getting with the boosters. Like, I guess I just don't buy the fact that Houston doesn't have boosters. You think the oil money should be there. They have plenty of things there. I mean, yeah, I'm thinking Casey's talking about Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin, but like, to me, this is a plea to your collective. Houston, we know where we want to be. We're not Phi Slamma Jamma, but you know what? We're pretty damn good in the Big 12, and we want to stay at this level. We need to level up to make sure we're staying up with BYU and Carolina, Duke, and Florida. Yeah, I put an SEC team in there.
Of course you did. He made it to a final, didn't he, a couple of years ago with no money as a poor one? So imagine what he could do with money. Was it last year?
He was in the final. Wasn't it last year? He was in the Final Four?
I watch football.
Probably. I forget where I put my keys earlier.
We'll come back around to that in just a minute.
Have you guys been to Houston, by the way?
Never.
Nope.
From what I hear, I was
scheduled to speak there a couple of years ago and had to actually bail. But go ahead.
Well, we need to find some ways to get us to come speak about SEC football in Houston. There's a big LSU contingent there. But Houston is one of the culinary, speaking of LSU, the culinary meccas in the United States. Great little mix, great little smattering of all sorts of different things. So let's go to Houston.
Love it.
All right. I'll meet you there. MBG says LSU should give all of the NIL funds they use for men's basketball to Lane Kiffin. And our friend Jafari Rastaman says, divert men's basketball NIL to CLK. At this point, I wouldn't mind seeing us divert all NIL money allocated to men's basketball to Lane Kiffin. Actually, it should be said Lane Kiffin. Instead, we should field the team with walk-on players who are out there competing for scholarships. If we do this, we won't see a major drop-off in wins for the basketball program. We will still generate TV revenue from the SEC. And CLK will be able to bring home a natty sooner than expected. So just wrap up the basketball program completely, men's basketball program completely. And just
don't piss off Auntie Kim. Don't piss off Auntie Kim. And like,
we're going to talk about her in a minute.
When do we, like, at what point has he been called CLK now? Is that a new thing?
I had the same thought.
Well, That's message board fodder. They usually just, God forbid, you spell the whole name out. You can see here in the post, he can't even put a space between Lane Kiffin. Yeah. But yeah, they'll do that. They'll do CBS at Clemson for Coach Dabo Swinney, or CBV, or, you know, CSB for Coach Shane Beamer. You'll see that on message boards. It's the lingo, Craig. Do you even message board, bro?
Yeah, I do, but apparently not very well. But so I guess here's my question. Do we got to make Lane Kiffin a strong-ass offer?
Yeah.
That's a great way of tying this whole thing together.
Isn't it great? See?
How hilarious would it be if LSU hired Will Wade?
They should should totally bring him back from NC State. Him and the manager guy. Is the manager still there? Did he
leave? No, he left. He left. The aura
guy?
Yeah, he left.
Where
did he go?
He got a stronger offer.
His stronger offer from Morehead State.
Where the hell's Morehead State?
He went back home.
Where is Morehead? Is it in Louisiana?
Louisiana, yeah.
No offense to Louisiana, but like you're telling me, like, what is that guy actually worth? What do you think he's doing at Morehead State? Is he working the bookstore?
What's minimum wage nowadays?
I have no idea.
I would like to confirm.
$5.15 when I was in high school.
It's higher.
Rob,
than
what was it when you were in high school? Was it $8?
I haven't graduated yet. I would like to confirm that Houston did lose the national championship to Florida last year.
Thank you for looking that up.
Well documented here on SEC Sunday Night. Okay, to the Plains.
All right, MBG says it's all over for Auburn basketball. BC9228 says for those that haven't accepted the reality, we will never be back to where Bruce had us. Face it. Don't you just want to give him a hug? Just give him a hug.
This is pure Auburn.
This is perfect message board. Look at the downvotes too, by the way. This is just prime message board overreaction. We are not one full season removed from Bruce Pearl, and we have used the word never, meaning not ever in the existence of the program can they return to the Final Four.
Never. Taylor Swift is singing.
It's the same staff.
Yeah, I know. It's the same everything except I don't know, like a couple of their top players and their head coach. But that doesn't mean they can't rebuild it.
What's the statute of limitations on Stephen Pearl though? Like does he get 2 years? But I'm asking seriously, like how long until you're like, forget you, we're gonna bring back your dad. Is it 2 years?
Well, bring back your dad, or are we going to go John Gruden?
We might. Well, if I read the message boards, which I do, Casey, thank you very much. It would be a groomer to bring him back.
I mean, what are they? 5-5 in the SEC, 14-9 overall. They don't lose really at home still. Like, all right, are they down from recency bias is huge too, right? Because they've. Mm-hmm. They weren't very good until Bruce got there. They were
at all, ever.
Like ever. They were always the bottom feeder.
Other than Charles Barkley.
Yeah. And so they have a couple good years. Virginia may or may not have double dribbled in the Final Four a couple years ago, depending on what conference you were rooting for. And now it's, I think he does get another year because I don't think it's that bad. Let him recruit. Bruce kind of up and left.
It is Auburn, though, Casey. And Auburn is not the most patient or stable university in the SEC or college.
Well, how much money is going to be locked up in coaches they fired, though, if they fire Pearl after 1 year? Between football and men's basketball, they're going to – that program's – they might as well build a lake so they can be Clemson with a lake. I don't even know what that means, but it sounded provocative.
I don't even know what provocative means.
It means provocative. All right. MBG says, MBG has received confirmation that Missouri does not belong in the SEC. So
Rob, pick this board, Maggie.
This is from SEC Rant, which is one of our favorites on the show, and a common poster to at Board Geniuses. Site page, whatever it's called. Poker Face, who's obviously from Middle Tennessee, odd, says polling confirms Missouri not a fit for the SEC. In addition to their abysmal athletic efforts and pitiful campus life, polling confirms what anyone who has ever visited the state know all too well. A decisive 95.3% of Missourians self-identify as living in the Midwest. Only 2% less than Iowa, the quintessential Midwestern state. And then there's a link, which is gone. I don't know how to do that. Quote, Emerson College Polling and the Middle West Review are excited to share the findings from the largest ever study on Midwestern boundaries and identity. The study surveyed 22 states, including those that are traditionally considered to be the Midwest, but also surveyed its surrounding states, including Arkansas, West Virginia, Colorado, Oklahoma, among others. Over 11,000 responses were collected over across 22 states. The study finds a majority of residents in Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Illinois, North Dakota, Wisconsin, Nebraska, South Dakota, Indiana, Kansas, Michigan, Ohio, Oklahoma, and Wyoming consider themselves to, quote, live in the Midwest. Similarly, the majority of people in the same states consider themselves to be Midwesterners, though at a lesser intensity. It is time to right the wrong, says Porker Face of a few years ago, and boot those Yankees from the conference. Yeah. Fantastic. That was a lot of words, guys.
That's a lot. What's your favorite Lady Gaga song? Is it Poker Face?
It's Porker Face. Yeah, it's
no, Weird Al Lady Yankee. Gaga. Yeah, is that Porker Face? Is that what it is? Like, what's your favorite?
The one she did on the Super Bowl show last night is my favorite.
Good. Rob, so what's yours?
This is a Lady Gaga.
Is that Lady Gaga?
Yeah.
Telephone.
Yeah, I love Poker Face. So I used to, like, when I was a world history teacher, there was a spoof on Bad Romance. It was on the French Revolution. It was fantastic. Yes. Like, I would have the whole, like, freshman group saying, La, la, liberté,
égalité. To your point, I think I have more Lady Gaga songs as mnemonic devices for learning in high school classrooms than any other artist that I've ever heard. I've heard teachers of all subjects use Lady Gaga.
Okay. Use Taylor Swift's Bad Blood. So speaking of Missouri, you ready? I'm going to bring this back around to Missouri. When we were talking about the origins of the Civil War, I would use Taylor Swift's song Bad Blood about Band-Aids not fixing bullet holes. You know, the origins of the American Civil War. That's on another podcast that you guys can check out. History with Craig.
Make sure that you listen to History with Craig. It is nestled somewhere in the midst of these message boards.
He's chatty tonight.
It's a message board thread somewhere buried deep in the SEC rant world. All right, Casey.
Maggie's not
well, well, hang on. Well, we didn't answer the question. Does Missouri belong in the SEC? What does Maggie say?
Yes. I tagged her. We'll see what she says. She'll be here in a minute.
We know what she'll say.
She's there.
There she is.
So anyway, Maggie, do you guys belong in the SEC? Or
that's a great segue.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, Casey, baseball season is here. Speaking of things Missouri doesn't belong in, we have an opportunity to discuss the one of the greatest sports that the SEC has to offer, right? And oftentimes we can look at the SEC as a football league. Last year they were definitely a basketball league, but baseball is kind of that backbone, that foundational piece, America's pastime. These schools in the South, specifically the schools in the South, play baseball really well, mainly because they're not in the snow still. And so we'll look forward to getting all these schools down here around the SEC territory, and some schools in the AC will welcome schools down from the cold weather to play this weekend and on opening weekend. Casey, your overall thoughts on college baseball? I know that is where your heart lies. Just if you would, an ode to the sport and what you're looking forward to as the season is upcoming.
This is as good to me personally, and probably not a great opinion for most out there, but this weekend is arguably my favorite sports weekend of the year, alongside the first weekend of March Madness and the first weekend, the true week one of college football. I put it up there that high. I love college baseball. I fell in love with this game a long time ago when I was a wee lad watching Craig Biggio and John Valentine and Mo Vaughn in college. So I won't tell you where they went to college, but I watched all those guys in college. And from that point on, I just love the sport. The ping of the bat is awesome. I know they played that up a couple of years ago. I think the SEC, LSU again, looks loaded. I think the ACC is going to have a lot again. Transfer portal, trying to keep up with figuring out who went where and why and when. Coaches, big time coaches making big time moves this year. Duke coach going to Virginia, taking the entire Duke roster with him to Virginia. Virginia coach going to Mississippi State, taking half of his roster, and the guys that didn't go went to LSU or Tennessee or wherever. So it's going to be a fun season. It's going to be a long season, and it starts Friday night in most big-time places. So I'm excited for it. I can't wait. Sorry for your South Carolina boys hitting the injury bug early, which really does stink. I don't like that ever for any school, regardless of rivalry or not.
Well, it's been well documented here on the Chief Sports Network, too, that some of those injuries not as serious as the Twitterverse may like to make them out to be at times. Obviously, Jake McCoy is out for the year, Tommy John surgery, but Philpott will be back. Scobie's good. Scobie's good to go. And we also saw, surprisingly, this last weekend, Bo Hollins get back in the scrimmage lineup, and it looks like he may be ready to go for day one as well. So. Just a lot of a lot going on across the league. I'm looking at a couple of big time matchups in Arlington. You got Vanderbilt and
it's a great tournament.
Texas Tech in that one. You've also I was trying to pull up the list. If you have it, you can save me here. But
I actually can save you. I've got a hot take for freezing cold takes.
Okay, go ahead.
In the College World Series in Omaha, LSU and Texas will meet. And this time, Joy, sorry, Hook'em will take the national championship. But one of the things that I'm really interested in seeing, what does the Tennessee Volunteers look like? Tony Vitello is now in San Francisco. And I felt like he gave the Vols a certain edge. I think opposing teams really probably didn't care too much for the Vols and the swagger that they brought. They were very excited with who, you know, with the hitting coach that they brought in. I cannot remember his name off the top of my head right now. But do the Vols still have that edge with, you know, a new leadership? And a couple of dark horses for you to possibly make some noise. Look for Arkansas and Ole Miss to make some noise in Omaha.
I wouldn't say Arkansas is a dark horse to get to Omaha. I think not perennially Dave Van Horn and that
to win
that group.
To win.
Yeah, and they should have. How many times have they choked it out the last few years?
I was going to say.
Would they are the number one seed or close? Snake and they bitten. Were a foul ball pop fly away from winning the College World Series. Instead, it drops in. But a thing about Tennessee, too, and yeah, Vitello leaving, but they got the kid Henry Ford from Virginia, who was arguably, I don't think he was eligible to be drafted, but he may have been a top five draft pick last year if he was eligible to go. That kid's a flat out stud. Look for him to make some noise. I think Tennessee will be just fine. They kept most of the staff. I know the hitting coach went over to Kevin O'Sullivan in Florida after he got hired as the interim, but I think they're going to be all right. They might not have the swagger that they did, but I think they're going to be good baseball. They're always good.
They might not, but I think that Elander was the right move there. And you mentioned Kevin O'Sullivan in Florida, where, you know, we don't necessarily have time to get into the offseason drama, but a lot of talent in Gainesville. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what they do as well. Here's the lineup for opening weekend in Arlington in the Shriners Children's College Showdown. Oklahoma and Texas Tech on Friday, TCU and Vanderbilt on Friday, Oklahoma State and Arkansas on Friday, and then they will rotate around and everybody will get a matchup there. So again, Oklahoma, Texas Tech, TCU, Vanderbilt, Oklahoma State, Arkansas. Some great teams there. All eyes on Arlington this weekend, I think. And then we'll kind of be all over the place, kind of spot watching our favorite teams as it goes throughout the rest of the country. But some big matchups already.
The following week, Auburn, SEC-wise, plays in Globe Life as well against Kansas State, Louisville, and I believe the third game, Florida State.
Florida State. Yeah, I'm looking at it. You're right.
So, like, that's a heck of a week after. And Auburn's projected to be top five in the conference. So, I haven't drilled down on their roster, who they got and where and when, but they should be all right. And Alabama's going to be really good, too, with the shortstop, Jeter kid.
And you mentioned – and while we're at it, we'll just go to weekend three in the Amgy Bank College Baseball Series here, Arizona State, Mississippi State on Friday, UCLA and Tennessee in week three will be fantastic.
That's a jersey matchup right there.
Virginia Tech and A&M, and then we're going to rotate those matchups around as well. So a lot of SEC flavor in those first 3 weeks, playing in some showcase tournaments that will be really really telling as we're early on in the season to see who's got what and who's still trying to figure some things out. It's early, but there's something about college baseball, whether it's on the radio. I got a pack of sunflower seeds or boiled peanuts, and I'm kicked back. Maybe I'm grilling. Maybe I'm, you know, putting out some mulch, doing some things in the yard. Maybe I'm actually out at the park, right? But there's just something laid back and relaxing about it that I really, really, really enjoy and looking forward to this season, especially in the SEC, because it's always going to be exciting. And there's not a dull weekend when it comes to our perspective looking at the whole league. Last thing I want to mention here before we get out of here is, again, we're watching Texas and Kentucky in the women's college basketball matchup here. Number 18, Kentucky, is down 51-48 to number 4, Texas. Some big matchups across the SEC. South Carolina beat Tennessee yesterday in the biggest conference margin of victory in the history of the school. Biggest defeat for the historic powerhouse Tennessee as well. Kim Caldwell had some really interesting comments in the postgame presser. I don't know if you guys saw this, but she basically said, "My team quits when they face adversity, and you'll have to ask them about that. I'm not really sure why they do that, but they quit."
That's coaching. That's coaching. You cannot throw your players under the bus for, we can't deal with adversity. It is your job to prepare them for adversity. So, Kim, as much as I enjoy your content, go coach your players better.
And really what it sets up is the matchup on Saturday night. Prime time, 8:30, South Carolina versus LSU. LSU has 15 30-point victories this year. South Carolina is on an absolute heater, has won the last two games by 40-plus. And now the Gamecocks go to Baton Rouge. It'll be Dawn Staley versus Kim Mulkey. These two teams are going to face off in what is a little bit of a rivalry. Texas is obviously kind of elevated in the SEC, and it's more Gamecocks and Longhorns as of late. They've played six times in the calendar year, essentially. But the matchup between South Carolina and LSU is something that all eyeballs should be on this weekend. Obviously, you have the underlying story of Malaysia Fulwiley, who was a guard at South Carolina from Columbia, now playing for Kim Mulkey in Baton Rouge. And I think it'll be great for the league as we continue to see the rise of women's sports, the rise of women's college basketball, and an increasing popularity around softball as well. You talk about the SEC's dominance in a lot of sports. Softball is another sport where it is locked down. And the tournament last year was just a who's who of SEC teams. So interested to see how that matchup plays out in Baton Rouge on Saturday night. Question
will,
for you.
Before we who get out will here. Be dressed better? You or question. Auntie Kim?
Who will have the more impressive outfit? Dawn Staley or Kim Mulkey?
Kim Mulkey all day long. Auntie Kim has always got it rocking with the bling bling.
But do we like it though? That's my question.
Yes,
we like it. That we like. Great.
Yes, we like Auntie Kim.
What'd you say? Listen,
Dawn's outfit yesterday was fantastic.
I thought it was fantastic. I was at the game yesterday, enjoyed Dawn's. Yeah, you weren't. That's true. Enjoyed Dawn's outfit as well. While you know, Maggie wants to throw one more shot at us. No.
Oh, Maggie for the win.
Don't say us. Don't say
we've
us.
We've already discussed that, Maggie. If you were here for the whole show, you would have heard us talk about the Super Bowl.
Have heard Rob avoid talking anything about the Seahawks because Drake May couldn't complete a pass because the Patriots offensive line couldn't block five, couldn't block four.
Really, really, if I want to, yeah, that's the sad reality of it, Craig, is that the left side really of the line is made up of SEC rookies, and they both got their tails.
Listen, don't trust those LSU guys. The Georgia guy had to bail out the LSU guy the entire time, and as usual, the LSU guy couldn't come through with it, so what a shock.
But to your point about Drake May, I think that he did he got rattled early. And there was just no coming back from it. once
he really didn't play well up. All playoff. Right.
Correct.
Even when he hit those two big passes for the touchdown, I'm like, yeah, that didn't happen. That's just not happening again. Like, that was literally, I felt like a blind squirrel catching a nut.
Well, they've played well late in games, and that's all, you know, we were talking about it during the game, and Casey said something in the first half. They just looked meh. And I said, you know, if they could hang in there, if you don't have that touchdown that Seattle scores to make it the two score, I think that there's a little bit of a momentum shift, and he's not pressing it down quite as far downfield like he did into triple coverage and then throwing the interception. And you may have seen a little bit more of a competitive finish. I still think that the Seattle team was probably a little bit too much for the Patriots to handle, even if we'd have gotten some changes there. But once
Mike McDonald had the scouting, he was ready.
Once the lights went on or off, or however you want to phrase it for Drake May, it was over. Okay, boys. This has been SEC Sunday Night live on the Chief Sports Network. We are here to give you the casual conversation for the serious sports fan, and we're going to be here every single week to discuss all of your favorites in football, basketball, baseball, the women's sports as well, basketball, softball. We're covering everything because we love this league and we love
the sports world. And we love
Mizzou. And we love
Mizzou.
And we love you. Thanks for being here with us. Make sure to download the Chief Sports app so that you can see us all the time, and our family of shows here on the network, thanks to our good friend and esteemed producer of the Message Board Genius Podcast, Casey Cregan, for being with us as always. Thanks to Brad Crawford, and thanks to my boy Craig. I'm Rob Williams. We'll see you next time.